Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and our special guest today is Woody Hall. Woody is the Assistant Commissioner and Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Customs Service. And joining us in our conversation is Craig Petrin.
We finished the last segment talking about risk, and I have one kind of related question to that. What challenges has your office experienced in implementing modernization in terms of overcoming resistance to change from the people side of change? So in what ways are you helping employees cope with the change that introducing a new system can cause?
That's a great question, because I think there is a tendency to overlook the impact of change on an organization. And so we have actually identified that as a special activity that needs to be addressed as part of modernization programs. So while we have a tendency to talk about all the technical stuff, how we're designing the system, how we're getting the requirements identified and so forth, we actually have a part of our partnership that's supporting the development of the automated commercial environment whose task it is to help us with the organizational issues. And what are some of those? For example, we're making a fundamental shift from the way we've been doing business to a new way of doing business. Folks have to be trained, just something that simple. So you have to synchronize the availability of training with the delivery of new capabilities so that they know how to use the system, they know what it means, the data meaning changes a little bit, the way the screen faces look on the computer change a little bit. Just going from a system that they already know where they have to log on and off of various systems and applications to do their work. Now they just log on to one place, but now they've got to know how to access those various functions and information through that single improved interface. Well, that all takes training. And so training is getting a lot more attention than it might. Just keeping the folks informed. We've got a very active communication staff. This is such a big program, and it takes so long to execute. It's very easy for people to feel out of touch or to feel like they don't know what the current status is, and that's not good for the program or them. So we spend a lot of time keeping folks up to date on what the latest happenings are, what's the status of the project. When there are delays, we let them know about that. But mostly we want them to be aware of what's coming down the road, what they need to get ready for. It helps them think about how their way of doing business is going to change so that they can plan and prepare for it. These are all things that really have to be wrapped around a successful systems development effort. And then, of course, you have to constantly recompete for the support you have for a program. New things come along, priorities change. Even with a successful program like this that people understand the value at a fundamental level, we've got a lot of resources associated with this project, and there's always a temptation in any organization to start peeling those away to do other critical things. So it's not a matter of just selling the program once. You have to keep selling people on why it's still relevant, why it's important. It's a good investment. Things are being managed well. And so that's a constant job to keep your peers, keep your bosses comfortable with where things are and that it's still a relevant activity. So you have to work up the chain. You have to work down the chain. Some of it's just keeping the interest and support around the value of the effort. Some of it is preparing people to do business in a fundamentally new way.
Plans for modernization were already underway before September 11th of last year. How did the management approach to modernization change after the terrorist attack?
Like most organizations that are involved in efforts to protect the nation have kind of been swept under the label of Homeland Security, we did actually step back and take a hard look at the relevance of the program. Does this still make sense? Is this still the best thing, the right thing for us to be doing? And the conclusion was yes for a number of reasons. One is operations at Customs are fairly integrated. There's a lot of overlap between what our inspectors do and what our agents do. And so this system, really the information it collects, the information it provides, the analysis, the analytical support that it can support, really help most segments of Customs. And so the infrastructure definitely still needed to be put into place. And the application itself was viewed as useful to customs in general. So it looked like it was still the right thing to do. One thing that shifted, I think, would be emphasis. I think post 9/11, we certainly are far more focused on terrorists than we were. They were always on the list. But I think pre 9/11, you know, our primary role was to ensure that the laws and agreements about imports were enforced and that the revenue was collected. And next to that, I'd say probably drug interdiction was a big challenge for us. And I think anti-terrorism has slipped in above both of those. Many of the Commissioner Bonner's initiatives with container security, which really has been embraced worldwide in terms of other countries joining with us to speed up the point in time at which we understand what folks are intending to ship to the United States, improving the sharing of information amongst governments, has been embraced very well. And so we understood then that we needed to put far more emphasis on targeting materials and persons who might be associated with terrorist activities. Not so much in the system that we're currently building, but we're also focusing a lot of our effort on how those organizations and persons finance their operations. So the financial piece of what we do has gotten a lot more focus. So it's not so much that we've made a huge shift in our methods and systems as much as we have shifted the focus of our interest to people who may be trying to harm the country through terrorism. We haven't talked a lot about the other kinds of technology that I'm responsible for, but there has been a big shift there too in our non-intrusive inspection equipment, which we use to identify anomalies in shipments without having to unload trucks or devand seek containers. We are now developing new classes of equipment that help us detect chemical and biological agents and radiological material, much of which, by the way, is legitimate. There's a lot of radiological material that's medical or naturally occurring that's in the stream of commerce that you have to be able to discern from truly dangerous material. So I think the subject of our interest has changed. And what that means for the automated commercial environment is we have put more emphasis in some of the analytical capability and some of the data sharing capability that was always there, but we've moved some of that up in the order in which it'll be deployed so that we can provide support sooner to the enforcement part of our operation.
Next question. In general, what impact will moving to the new Department of Homeland Security have on the customs mission, and even more specifically, your roles and responsibilities?
Well, I think, I should step back and say that that the information technology folks have been meeting for some months to try to get a head start on what needed to be done to begin the integration of our information infrastructures and our information systems to allow the new department to hit the ground running, so to speak. I think one of the major objectives of the department is to improve our ability to work together, to coordinate our efforts, and to do that through better sharing of information. And that's largely, in my view, been a very successful, voluntary, and collaborative effort. A lot of good work has been done to document what all of our legacy systems are, or that is, the systems that already exist that are in use, so that we know where the commonality is, where the differences are, and begin thinking about the different approaches we're going to have to make, where we're going to have to convert our way of doing it to someone else's so that there's more interoperability, more commonality, and that work's all underway. I think the real potential for Homeland, and frankly, most of us are very excited about the potential the new department offers, is that while there was a lot of cooperation and sharing before 9/11, it was clear that we could and needed to do a better job. And I think by all being in the same department, that'll be easier. It wasn't that we couldn't do it before, but there was just certain bureaucratic inertia there that you had to overcome that hopefully we'll be able to eliminate by being inside the same tent, so to speak. And so I think that'll make it easier to do what needs to be done. I think by being in the same budget request, by working under the same leadership, it'll be easier to align our priorities and to strengthen our business cases for the investments that need to be made. And I think there's just real opportunity to reduce cycle time, improve efficiency, effectiveness, all these things that really reflect just being able to function more like a team. And there is real commitment to make that happen that I see amongst the folks that I work with. And I think that's the real potential. I don't think of the department as doing something for the first time so much as it's taking a lot of parts that already work pretty well and raising them to a new level that will be able to do this important work better on behalf of the American people.
Woody, I'm afraid we're out of time. Craig and I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, I'd like to thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Woody Hall, the Assistant Commissioner and Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Customs Service. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and research, and you can also get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.